Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hi, this is Jessica.
This is Sharon.
We're here with Syosset Library's podcast, Turn the Page, and our guest today is...
I'm April Henry, and my 25th book is coming out July 28th, so I've written a lot of mysteries and thrillers for teens and adults.
I love mysteries and thrillers. They're awesome.
I love your books. I really do enjoy, that particular genre. My mom kind of raised me on mysteries and thrillers because that's what she liked to read. And I'm the young adult librarian at our library. And so I have had your books on my shelves since I started and have always recommended them to the teens. And we're really excited to have you speak with us today.
And I am new to the genre, I have to say. I am new to the genre. I am... or was a complete wimp. any of those Christopher Pike books or Lois Duncan books that, like, whenever I saw the covers and my friends reading them, I would whimper. But the whole genre found me much later in life, and I absolutely eat it up. And I'm so thrilled to have you here today.
Well, yeah. The nice thing about mysteries, especially, maybe not so much thrillers, but mysteries is a very big pond. And so there can be mysteries that are humorous, there can be mysteries that are romantic, there can be mysteries that with ghosts, there can be mysteries that are kind of horror. There's a lot of different subcategories. So you can find a place that you're always comfortable in.
And that's like the whole, like, there's that whole cozy mystery genre for people who want mysteries, but not too much.
Right. With the cats and the knitting.
but I've transcended that. And now I just want horror.
So how did you get into writing mysteries and thrillers? Like, what really got you into it?
Well, years and years ago, I had an agent and I had written a book that was just like a coming of age book. And then I wrote a book that was a family drama, and that got me my agent, and that again didn't sell. And then I wrote a book that was historical, and then I wrote that didn't sell. And then I wrote another book, and it was about a woman who finds what's probably a long lost Vermeer painting. And my agent said, I'm going to try and sell this as a mystery. And I said, I don't care if you try to sell it as a cookbook, I just want a sale. So luckily she'd given me a heads up, because a lot of times, especially in adult mysteries, if they buy one, they're going to buy several books. And so they wanted a 2-book deal. And sold in 3 days to the first editor who saw it. So I had those 3 days to think about, if I was going to write a second book with the same characters, what would I write? So I kind of accidentally backed into the genre. And but it turns out it's a super good fit for me, not only because, like we were talking about earlier, the fact that there can be many different kinds of mysteries and thrillers, but I like police procedures, I like DNA, I like learning things, I kind of like gritty stuff. I don't have trouble sleeping at night. I can look at gory pictures and just be fine. So, and it's also such high drama. A mystery and a thriller, a lot of times, if the person fails in their quest, someone is going to die. And so I'm not going to ever write a book about a girl who can't decide who to go to the prom with. It's just not in my interest level. I want something with high stakes. And then that turns out to be something that really appeals to reluctant readers. And once I started realizing that a lot of people who are not big readers like my books, I started trying to appeal to them more with like shorter chapters, cliffhanger endings, a pretty relentless pace. And then it turns out everybody likes that. So it was a good fit.
Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was going to say my first my first exposure to your books was The Body in the Woods. And what I loved about that book in particular was the whole, the Portland, the search and rescue aspect of that. So tell me a little bit about how you kind of came across, you know, if you worked with them, or how did you actually do your research for that?
Well, it started when we were at a concert and our friend's kid was in ninth grade, and she said that her daughter had started volunteering for Multnomah County Search and Rescue. I changed it to Portland County because I took some liberties and they do some things that might get them into trouble in real life. So I didn't want people thinking that I didn't want them completely conflating the two, but there's probably 95% overlap. But so they said she was volunteering for search and rescue. And I said, oh, like they find people lost in the woods, right? And she said, actually our teens are different for two reasons. One is that it's almost all teenagers in the group. And most groups don't even have teens, or if they do have teens, they don't go out on real searches. Our teens can even lead a search if they have the proper training. And some of the searches are actually to recover bodies. And it was like, these are kids in 9th through 12th grade. And the second thing that's different is 30 to 40% of what they do is crime scene evidence recovery. So if there is an outdoor crime scene in the Portland area, I'm not sure how this has changed in the pandemic, but normally they would be called out to look for the evidence. They would crawl around on hands and knees, shoulder to shoulder, looking for anything that, quote, God didn't put there. It might be a bullet casing. It might be the victim's tooth. It might be a knife. It might be a paper napkin that blew in 5 minutes ago. It's not their job to decide if it's evidence. It's just their job to put a little flag like you see on construction sites next to it. They don't even touch it, because if they did, they enter the chain of custody. But they've been credited with solving dozens of murders. And I was like, wow, real teens doing real crime stuff. I remember sitting in the chair thinking, this is a book. Like, I knew that sometimes you just know. And I thought, that is definitely a book. So I had to pass a background check to go, but I started attending their classes and going to their training. So the first one that I went to was actually on the top of Larch Mountain, which is 14 miles outside of Portland on a road that doesn't really have any turnouts. And it turned out that just by coincidence, they were doing this training on the Larch Mountain on a Saturday to teach the people how to do crime scene evidence recovery, all the new recruits. But the night before, all of the people who'd already been trained had been up there recovering the body of a murdered Starbucks barista who had been dumped up there. So these kids and adults had been actually doing crime scene evidence recovery and body recovery. So the kids are probably way more fierce than I was at that age, and most of them tend to go into law enforcement or the medical field. So, and the kids do not have to do body recovery if they don't want to, but it seems like they all do it. So it was just fascinating to me. I love spending time with them.
I think that's, it really amazing. Appeals, yeah, like as far as for teen readers to see, you know, the teens get this like leadership role where they're actually allowed to do, you know, things that they wouldn't normally expect, touching evidence.
It's empowering. And,
right, exactly. Very empowering for teens to read about it.
Yeah, and the fact that it was real. I actually got it start with a Boy Scout troop probably in the 60s. There was someone lost in Mount Hood, and they had run through all of their searchers for this person who was lost. And then this guy was like desperate, and he was like, does anybody know of anyone that could go out? And this, they had a Boy Scout troop go out and look and successfully found the person who was lost. And then it became kind of like a Boy Scout troop. And then over time, it lost its affiliation with the Boy Scouts, and girls were allowed to join. It still has kind of a Boy Scouty feel to it when they start their meetings, like people march in with a flag and there's like a pledge and stuff. But I was just really impressed with them. And the people who do it, they are like life, their lives revolve around it. You really, our friend's daughter ended up not only doing it for a year, because she was also a competitive track runner, and it was hard. You don't know when someone's going to go missing, then you have to be available to come and do the search. So she ended up not being able to juggle both things after a year.
Yeah. And they even, they get pulled out of class. Like they would, you know,
they can be pulled out of class. They, they have to respond within an hour to meet at the sheriff's office and get in a van and go someplace. So, so they have to maintain their grades and stuff. There has been issues. There was an issue at a school one time though, where the kids are taught that if you see blackberry bushes, the bad guy might think this is a great place to throw the evidence because no one's going to look in here. So their thing is they have to go through it. That's why they wear like what look like climbing helmets, because they might actually have to push their way into some blackberry bushes. And there was a girl who was called out of class by the school guidance counselor, and they said, honey, we know you're cutting yourself. People have seen the scratches on your arms. And she was like, no, I'm on search and rescue, and we had to go through a blackberry bush to find evidence. But yeah, they're just, I was just so impressed with them. That's why I had to write about them.
No, I really, that was, like I said, that my first book of yours that I really enjoyed. And then I'm trying to think, the other one, The Night She Disappeared. Okay. So that's the one where,
pizza delivery.
Right. So like that to me reminded me of a lot of like sort of true crime, where you have these like abductions and, they're kind of like the movie Room, mm-hmm. you know, right. Exactly. You're kind of in a confined space. And
The Night She Disappeared was actually inspired by a real case in Oregon. It was about 30 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And why it stuck in my mind for two reasons. One was that I had worked at a pizza parlor. And the second was that when the guy called and made his fake delivery, he had it pieces delivered to an address that didn't exist. There was a street, but there wasn't that number. It was just a big country road with no places. And so they found the girl's car the next day with the keys in the ignition and her purse on the seat. And the pizza boxes scattered on the ground, and they didn't find her. And so it turned out that when he called, he asked, is the girl who drives, or I think it was the orange Volkswagen, working that night? And they said, no, it's a different girl. And it actually thought about it for a second. And they should have said, why do you even care? But so he took that second girl. And I always wonder, what would it be like to be that other girl, to know that this killer had called and wanted you? And the twists in the book are actually taken from real life. There was a person who was a suspect that that ended up dying. And the family did hire a psychic who had completely bogus ideas about what had happened. And in a weird twist, about 2 years ago, I was invited to a library. And the librarian came up to me and said, that girl was my cousin. She actually recognized the story. And I was feeling very anxious and nervous. And she had brought the other relatives of this woman. But you know what? They were like, they were very appreciative and they were fine with it. In fact, told me another family story about another murder in their family. So, but that was a little weird. I have moved away. I still use real stories a lot for inspiration, but maybe not as closely. So like my book that's coming out in July, The Girl in the White Van, does start with a real event. There was a kidnapper who was taking girls in my neighborhood, stalking them and driving a van. But I changed around everything that happened in real life. He was killed by the police, but I in my book, I made it that he took some girls, but that the girls were not based on anyone real. So it's like a mashup of fact and fiction. But even when I'm writing fiction, I try and make sure that everything is accurate. You know, like if, like for this book, I talked to somebody at the DMV about how they keep track of plates. Like, well, I didn't realize that they don't ever list the color of a car in because they know anybody could paint your car tomorrow. Plus, one person's beige is another person's champagne, you know, so there's no point.
As we learned 6 years ago with the dress debacle online.
Yes. So, I really, really like to do research. It's my favorite thing to do.
Well, you're in good company because librarians adore research.
That is true. So I wanted to know, when you're writing for, so you've written for both young adults and for adults, mm-hmm. correct? Yes. So how do you sort of approach it for each of those different audiences? Like, is there a sort of, is it more just like content? Is it like the way the story is structured? Like what, you know?
I actually do not do that much difference for my teens versus my adults. My vocabulary level, I keep absolutely the same. I mean, for me, where I learned vocabulary words was from reading. And also, I tend to have a fairly simple style, I think, because I used to work in healthcare and we had to, for the government, anything that a Medicaid person would get had to have a sixth grade reading level. So I think from that trained me to write fairly simply. But I'll use words that maybe they don't know. And I figure that they will pick it up from context the way that I did. I do make the book shorter. I always aim for about 50,000 words versus maybe 75 or 80 for adults. I don't think I've ever had characters who were explicitly sexually active, and maybe probably weren't sexually active at all. And my adult characters did tend to be, but not in a vivid way. Mm-hmm. And the violence, I don't know. I feel like violence is more scary if I imagine it. There was a Michael Marshall book where the bad guy meets a woman in a restroom who catches him doing something bad. And so that's the chapter end. And then and later in the book, it says the bad guy's driving down the freeway and he opens the window and he throws out the first of Karen, what's her name's teeth. And I was like, oh my God, that's so scary and awful, but he never said what he did to her. So I feel like as readers, you can actually pull back violence. You don't need to describe it and we will fill it in and we'll fill it in worse. The monster in the closet is scarier than the monster is out of the closet. Just like in Stranger Things, once yeah. I could see the bad things, they weren't as scary, you know? So I think it's better to utilize the reader's imagination. But in terms of, I think the things around it are different. Librarians are much more vital to YA than they are for adult books because teens are kind of figuring out what they like to read. More books are being put in hands. They are required to read, whereas adults who don't like to read are just don't read. So, mm-hmm. but teens have to read. So librarians are kind of key to your success. They're there long after your person has grown up and maybe stopped reading teen books. I think there's more outlets for short stories and anthologies maybe than there are for adults. And I think adult publishing gives you a very limited time to show your book as a success. They will look at maybe 10 to 12 weeks. And whereas teen books, the publisher realizes that, hey, maybe a year from now, you're going to be on the Texas State reading list. You know, maybe 2 years from now, I'm 3, 4. So they have a much longer tail and are much more loath to take a book out of print than an adult publisher. So mostly I think it's the outside stuff. I think the book itself, I really don't write that much different other than my characters happen to be teenagers.
That makes sense. And I totally agree with you about, you know, books getting, you know, a pickup in popularity after the summer reading lists come out. And, you know, mm-hmm. I'm always recommending whatever books we enjoyed the past year to try to get them onto the mm-hmm. reading list, you know, like, and then you do see those copies will buy more in paperback and people will start taking them out more and more. And yeah, so. Mm-hmm.
Whereas with adults, they come to the desk and they want to eat up that thriller right now. And then if that thriller isn't digested and they haven't consumed that, there's another one in a week. So I do see what you're saying with that. And there's a lot more immediacy when it comes to the adult audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And adults, I think, are more aware of pub dates. You know, they might be like, oh, well, that book came out 5 years ago. It's old. And, you know, kids are still reading Lois Duncan. I think they rewrote them all so that the kids had cell phones. So they seemed a little bit more timely. But
it's new cover.
Very interesting, because just like really quickly, you know, Lois Duncan had like an actual true crime tragedy in her own life with her daughter. And she, before she passed away, she did, I think, like a BuzzFeed article. There was a BuzzFeed article about it where she engaged with people about the situation. And so many people couldn't understand why her daughter didn't just call on the cell phone and then had to be reminded that there were no cell phones when this happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, my my agent actually sold the rights to I Know What You Did Last Summer. And she didn't, my understanding is she did not like how the movie turned out.
she was pretty vocal about that. Are there any rights to any of your books?
Yes, everything is dead in the water right now, because obviously there's no filming, you know, unless you do something where everybody is on supposedly on Zoom all the time. I know that they're looking at how to possibly film books more safely, you know, like by like they're kind of talking about sports or something. Could you just make all the people be in quarantine together? And but the Girl Stolen, which was probably my most popular YA about a blind teenage girl who gets kidnapped, that has been under option for a long time. And that guy just recently optioned it again. He's written, he's had a couple, paid for a couple of screenplays to be done. And so I've seen those. And he was talking to a director last I heard, but I think, again, everything has slowed down. Body in the Woods and Blood Will Tell have been optioned by a guy who would really like to make them into like a Netflix series. Mm-hmm. And again, he emailed us at the beginning of the pandemic and was like, nothing is happening right now. We're just going to have to wait. So we gave both of them actually, our contract didn't cover acts of God, pandemics and stuff like that, but we extended the contract for both of them. It seemed only fair. They're working hard. And like, you know, like everyone else, it's not their fault that nothing is happening.
Right. This whole new world, right. Has it been, you know, as far as having to get out and try to, you know, you can't do like book signings, you can't do public events. Like how has this been, like this pandemic, when you're trying to get a new book out and word of mouth and everything?
Well, what's been hard for me is I do a lot of school visits. I was booked on 22 flights when everything fell apart, and was going to be in like 8 states, and all that is gone. There are still people who are hopeful for events in like October. I personally feel like those will cancel too. So I miss seeing the people that I write for. I'm missing teens. I just, right before we started talking, I finished making a little iMovie about the book, you know, and maybe I can spread that around. It's definitely limited things and made things more online. But I miss the personal connection. I miss actually talking to the shy teen who is not maybe even going to be able to email me, but will come up to me after I'm done speaking and I'm signing books and talk to me about how they want to be a writer too. I mean, those are the people that really touch my heart, are students who say they never read, but now they're reading because of my books, or the students who want to write. Because I think if I had felt that writing was something that real people did, which I did not, for I felt like it was like magical unicorns or something, I think I would have been a writer a lot sooner. So I try and encourage them to not give up and to read a lot. And really, it's not even the best writers who get published. It's the ones who don't give up. That's who gets published.
Perseverance, right? That's what it's all about.
Exactly.
Were there any authors that inspired you when you were looking to start out?
Yeah. So I really loved, there was a book I loved called The Silver Crown by Robert C. O'Brien. He wrote Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim, which more people are familiar with because I think it was an animated movie. But The Silver Crown, it still holds up. You know, I read that in like probably 1968. And it's about, now I don't, there wasn't really YA back then. So, but it could be read as a YA. It's a girl who wakes up on, I think, her 10th birthday. So that makes her kind of young. But it's a thick book, so that's more like YA. And there's a crown next to her on the bed, and she kind of accepts it. She goes out into a wooded area by her house. And when she comes back, her entire house is burned down and it looks like her family is dead. And then she's on the run with this crown. There's evil. I love that book so much. And when I first started getting published, I looked up Robert C. O'Brien. I wanted to reach out to him and thank him. And unfortunately, he had died like 3 years previously. But when I was 12, I don't know if you guys know this, but when I was 12, I wrote Roald Dahl. And no. I sent him a short story, and he sent me back, so you guys can see it.
You have it.
This postcard.
Awesome.
Telling me how much he liked my story. His editor asked me if she could put that student writing in, and so it was actually published in a magazine over in England in like 1972 or something. I had a second postcard from Roald Dahl, but I've lost it. I mean, it's a miracle I still have this.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing.
Yes, he said, "Dear April, I loved your story about Herman the Frog. I read it aloud to my daughter Ophelia, who also loved it. I read it to my secretary, Hazel, who giggled."
So, oh.
Actually kind of supposed to be kind of a jerk, but he was really nice to me.
I love that. This has been wonderful. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Okay, and look for my latest book, July 28th, The Girl in the White Van.
Will do.
Cannot wait.
Share that info with all my teens. And when we put the, when we get this live, I'll definitely make sure we do a little cross promotion there for you for that. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So once again, this was Jessica.
Sharon.
April Henry.
And we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.